This is WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, and we're going to get a good government and financial transparency review of the recently adopted state budget with Rachel Foss, a senior policy advisor for Reinvent Albany. Welcome back to the show, Rachel.
Happy to be here as always.
So before we get into what is actually contained and not contained within the adopted Article 7 bills and appropriation bills, I'm curious about your take on the actual process of crafting this budget, which came about 3 weeks late this year.
Yeah, I think unfortunately we're seeing a trend of late budgets in the last few years. Obviously, this isn't completely new to Albany, but you know, there's some worrying things that happen when the budget is late. I think the first is the longer it goes on, the more we are concerned about mischief happening and things that did not get discussed during, you know, hearings held by the legislature, getting inserted into the budget at the last minute. And then, you know, too often we see bills printed and voted on the same day, and the rank and file members of the legislature don't even have the opportunity to read them all before they have to vote on these things. So I think it's unfortunately, I think, an erosion of, you know, norms that we should be seeing, actually understanding the hundreds of pages of budget bills.
So in addition to understanding the hundreds of pages of bill text, there's also the information that is not made public, specifically information about the financials behind the budget. What, if anything, would you like to see in that regard when the actual voting is happening?
So Reinvent Albany, with some of our watchdog colleagues like the Citizens Budget Commission, we've been asking for several years now to have a financial plan table published with the One House proposals coming out from the legislature and the final budget coming out, you know, the final agreement. And this is basically so the public knows exactly how much is being spent in all these big categories. How much money is the state expecting to come in? How much is it going to spend? I mean, this is basic budgeting stuff. But what it really does is it's the accounting work that you would expect to be done by the state. You want to make sure everything is balanced, everything looks good, and that there's no giant liabilities that are being overlooked. So, you know, we think just basic financial tables should be coming out. And we just recently re-upped that request now that, you know, the governor's completed looking at the bills and done her vetoes.
Let's turn to what's actually in the budget. Anything stand out to you from a good government perspective as it pertains to financing of certain initiatives in the budget?
Yes, one initiative we were looking at making sure it was fully funded was the public matching program. This is starting for the first time this year for state legislative races. So for candidates who are participating in this small donor matching program, if they raise enough small donations and agree to different rules than just the normal process of running for office, then these candidates are eligible for public funding. This is really to amplify the voice of small donors rather than, you know, this kind of deep-pocketed special interest we see in Albany. So we were looking for robust funding for this program. It was funded at $100 million, which is great. I think in particular, since last year, there was a big fight over a much smaller number of only $25 million. And we saw the legislature pass a bill that would have greatly undermined the program and made it much weaker. So the governor vetoed that bill in the end and proposed a large amount of funding for the program, and that made it through all the way through the final budget. That was an important victory. And there's also money to administer the public financing program as well. That funding was good for our democracy.
Yeah, the $14.5 million for the administration of the public campaign finance program, do you feel like that will equip the state officials with enough resources to administer this successfully and not just administer it leading up to the elections, but then sort of monitor and police the spending when they review it after Election Day?
Yeah, I think it's a good number. This is the first time we're doing it in New York State. So I think what we'd like to see is, what happens as a result of this program, and both on the administrative level and on the candidate side. So, you know, there's two things that the Board of Elections really needs this money for. One is to make sure they have enough staffing to help candidates and campaigns understand the rules. And then the other part that you mentioned is the enforcement of the law. So, you know, we think that we should let the program run its course, see how it goes, and then make changes to both, you know, the funding levels if needed and the program itself, but after the program has fully been up and running for the full year.
There weren't any high-profile transparency initiatives in the budget, or at least nothing that the governor or lawmakers have been trumpeting, but maybe there's something buried in these hundreds of pages that you think will have a meaningful impact on the ability of New Yorkers to keep up with what their government and other public entities are doing.
Yeah, I think it's accurate to say that there was nothing big and exciting on the transparency front. We didn't see any improvements to the Freedom of Information law. That's something I know we've discussed in the past. The open meetings law changes that were made after COVID, they were just extended for another 2 years. We really wanted to see a mandated hybrid system where people could participate in person and remotely. That didn't happen. But a couple things that are positive that we saw move forward is one is a database of deals for local economic development spending. This is building off of the state database of deals that we got a couple of years ago. And then there is a change to the law to explicitly require public authorities, both state and local, to be subject to the open meetings law and the Freedom of Information law. Those are both good things. It's making sure that small local economic development entities don't fall through the cracks. But, you know, we would have liked to see much broader changes to the Freedom of Information law or on open data or open meetings. And we just didn't see that in the budget this year.
Were there any actions in the budget, as opposed to things they didn't do, were there actions that you feel were contrary to realizing more transparency? Anything that undermined public transparency, for example?
I don't know if there's anything that moved us in the wrong direction, but I would just say as a general point, something that I think is important for the public to understand with the budget is that, you know, there's a lot of things that go through in the budget as tax credits or tax expenditures, tax breaks for companies. They're not counted as expenditures, even though it's money that the state's not getting, or in some cases, it's checks the state is writing through the tax process. You know, we think as far as honest budgeting, those should be counted as expenditures. That's just a general transparency problem in the budget we've had for a long time. But I don't think we saw anything move backward on the transparency front overall.
Well, in terms of unfinished business, is there one thing that you would like to get done in the final 5 weeks of the legislative session?
You asked me for one. Maybe I can give you two. One thing we're looking for is on the Freedom of Information law. We'd like to see some major changes. There was a big push before the budget. We'd like to see at least at a minimum reporting of the amount of FOIL requests every agency gets and improvements to the amount of time it takes to receive FOIL requests. And another piece is we would like to stop tax abatements from taking money from schools. Right now, industrial development authorities can give away local taxes that would otherwise go to schools. There's a bill, S-89, that we would love to see passed by the state legislature that would stop that. So I may have cheated. I gave you two.
Well, we'll allow it this time. We've been speaking with Rachel Foss. She's a senior policy advisor for Reinvent Albany. Rachel, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And for more Capital Press Room content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. And if you listen to us from an Apple device, make sure to leave us a rating and a review so it helps other people find the show.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a statewide union of nearly 700,000 professionals in education and healthcare.